learning to be poor. The Apostle Paul said, I know how to have much, I know how to have little, I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. He said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I'm not one of those that believes that a preacher has committed the unpardonable sin. He doesn't expound the scripture before his people. The same verse that says preach the word says something else. It says exhort. It says reprove. It says rebuke. I think that as pastor of this church, I am not only to preach the word to you, I think I am to encourage you, to comfort you, to rebuke you, to exhort you. This morning I want to combine the word term mild rebuke and love, the term loving exhortation. And I want to speak to numbers of our people this morning. The truth that I'm going to give will be applicable to everybody, but they'll be directly effective in the lives of numbers of our people. For many of our people, for the first time in their lives, find themselves unemployed. Many of our people find themselves facing what Americans call poverty, what the rest of the world would call luxury. But many of our people find themselves for the first time facing our definition of poverty. Many men are having a tough time adjusting their male egos because of their inability to support their families in the fashion to which they've been accustomed. Numbers of our people are not very graceful in their acceptance of this newfound relative poverty. And I've been intending for some weeks to bring this message. I don't want to because it's not as preachy as I like to be. But I want to sit around the fireplace for a few moments and listen to the crackling of the flames and chat with you for a while about the recession and about the subject, learning to be poor. There's so many scriptures in the Bible. Hebrews 13:5 says, be content with such things as you have. Philippians 4:11 says, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. 1 Timothy 6:8 says, and having food and raiment, be therewith. Let us be therewith be content. Job 6:8, now therefore be content. Joshua 7:7, would to God we had been content. 1 Timothy 6:6, godliness with contentment is great gain. The word contentment means to be sufficient. It means whatever you have is sufficient for you. It means determining the size of your wants with the size of your haves. Before I pray and bring the message, I want to make a statement this morning. I want you to hear me carefully. This is so vital. Every person in the world that is happy, hear me now, every person in the world that is happy got happy by using the means that are available to every other person in the world. Did you hear me? I said, everybody in the world who's happy this morning is happy because of conditions available to every other person in the world. That means nobody's happy because he's rich. Nobody's happy because he has. God has placed happiness within the reach of every one of his children. And nobody today has found happiness on any road of life that is not available to every single human being in this world. So this morning, learning to be poor. Father, bless the message. Give me the folks' attention this morning. We need what I'm going to say. And I can't help the folks unless they hear. Amen. Teenage girl, have you become disgruntled because you can't have a new dress for the Valentine's sweetheart banquet? Child of one parent, have you become indulgent in self-pity because only your mother is with you at activities or you have only one parent at home. The first convert in Europe was a lady. The first church in Europe was in a little city called Philippi. The first church building was in the woman's house, the woman who was the first convert. Twice, at least, in later years, the Apostle Paul visited this first of the churches in Europe in Philippi. When a prisoner in Rome, the only church to send him an offering to the prison was the church in Philippi. The bearer of this gift became seriously ill because of the danger of the journey to Rome. For many reasons, this place, this church in Philippi, had a special place in the heart of the Apostle Paul. He called the church in Philippi his joy and his crown. I understand this. I rejoice to remember those members of that little church, the first one I ever pastored that was a full-time church. There was Jack and Eva Smoke. Jack was a 5'1". He was my song leader. There was Jack's mother, Mrs. Smoke. And there was Mr. Varner, who ran the country store. There was Mr. L.G. Eves, the first chairman of a deacon board I ever had, who had one leg only. There were Tom and Fay Ford, whose house and hearts were always open to us. Then the Furs, and the Trenches, and the McGeorges, and the Mundins, and the Waldrips. Mr. Waldrip, the first custodian I ever had. And there was the little Graham girl, who's now a middle-aged lady and a pastor's wife in southern Louisiana. And then there was Calvin Eves, who now pastors the largest fundamental church in the state of Richmond, Virginia. And there was teenage Abe Simon, who now is a pastor, and junior boy Harold Kaywood, who now pastors a fine church. There was his sister Ruth, that little church, and who's now a pastor's wife. And there was Homer Peden, Jr., who now serves as a foreign missionary in the East. And there were the white children, all now in the Lord's work. I used to pick them up and drive them to Sunday school every Sunday morning. And there was Kathy Gunter, who was a teenage girl in that little church, who long has been a missionary to Bolivia with her husband, John, and they've been supported by us for many years. There are many here in this room this morning who have similar memories. Paul writes this church of the first church he started in Europe. Paul writes the church and he says, I've learned to be abased. I've learned to enjoy poverty. I'm glad he said that. I've learned. That means he hadn't always known it. He said, I've learned to be content. That means there was a time when he wasn't always content. That encourages me. For if I, too, lack contentment in adversity, I have company. But if I do not learn to be content, I lose my company. And I think this morning, there are hundreds of us who need to learn to be poor. You have not known this part of life before. You've never sat down at a table that contains meager fare. You've never had to leave a house and move to a two-room apartment before. And gracefully, you're not doing it. May I help you learn? May I point to you this morning the pleasures of poverty? Let me remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that the throne of grace offers to you the same welcome sign as it offers to the rich. You cannot purchase access to the throne of grace. Now, if the God of glory welcomes you to petition him and fellowship with him, certainly you can find some contentment in that privilege. May I remind you, the Bible offers no treasures to Mr. Rockefeller that it withholds from you. The poorest little widow in this room this morning can glean the most beautiful orchid from the Bible just as easily as the millionaire can. Your salvation is just as real as the wealthiest saint. The rich can afford no lovelier sunset than is yours to enjoy. His moon is your moon. His stars are your stars. His Milky Way is your Milky Way. His Big Dipper is your Big Dipper. His sky is your sky. His evening clouds are your evening clouds. I'm trying to say that what we always said, the best things in life are free. The flowers, what Democrats they are. How happy they are to share their beauty and fragrance with men of all standing. The rose lavishes her loveliness on the unemployed as well as on the employed. The roses are just as fair for the poor. The sweet pea is just as delicate. The carnation is just as princely. And the gardenia is just as sweet in the garden of the poor as it is in the garden of the rich. I mean, the things that really matter in life are available to everybody. Recession does not dim the beauty of the sunset. Recession does not take away the fragrance of the gardenia. Recession does not take away the elegance of the rose. Recession does not take away the majesty of the hills. Recession does not take away the peace of the meadow. Recession does not take away the breathtaking experience of the sunset. Recession does not take away the love of a friend. Recession does not take away the slobbery kiss of a baby. Recession does not take away the warm handshake of someone who cares. Recession cannot diminish love. Recession cannot douse friendship. Recession cannot stop beauty. I'm saying that everybody in this room this morning, it matters not how poverty has gripped you or your percentage of poverty or ratio of want. It doesn't matter. I'm saying there are enough things in this world that are free for everybody where nobody has to be anything but content. You cannot afford or to buy the painting, but you own the original. The library is as open to you as it is to him, the rich. You can be counseled to the best minds in history. I wonder sometimes why people lament because they don't have a color television set. But right down the block here, you can have Plato talk to you. You can have Benjamin Franklin talk to you about industry and diligence and thrift. The best minds the world has ever known have left by their pens and print their knowledge for you. There's nothing quite so overrated as Gomer Pyle. Not against Gomer Pyle. I wish we had more like that on television and less of this godless heathenism nowadays on the television sets. But I mean, there's nothing so overrated as Gomer Pyle or Andy Griffith or Irish Brooks. I'm telling you my age now. But nothing so overrated as that. And there's nothing so underrated as a book. You know, one thing, I wish you couldn't afford some things so we'd have to read and learn something again. The birds sing as much for you as they do for the wealthy. And did you know that all clothes will be used clothing tomorrow? Go down and buy a new car tomorrow morning and then sell it tomorrow afternoon. And you'll be selling a used car, right? How much would you lose if I bought a car tomorrow and sold it the next day? What would I lose, Mr. Crutchfield? Probably $500. I'm saying everybody drives a used car. Everybody wears used clothing. There's nothing so overrated as wealth. Believe me, I mean it. I could have some money if I wanted to. Well, I could be worth $25 if I worked at it. But I mean this. I don't want to be like those that have it. I don't. I'll tell you, there are more riches in poverty than you'll find in riches. There is more joy in tears than you'll find in laughter. There's more joy in clouds than you'll find in sunshine. I have a poem on this subject. I remember years ago, about, I guess, 10 or 15 years ago. I was a little bit on the downside. I was a bit discouraged, just about to invade discouragement. So I went out to watch a sunset. I saw the azure blue of the sky. And I saw the emerald green as it blended in with the topaz tint in the sunset. And I watched the sunset of the sun as it made its trek toward other worlds. And as it settled down in the west, my burdens seemed lifted. My load seemed lighter. Ah, the sunset, it did something for me. And so I danced gaily back home, rejoicing. My load was lifted. The next day, it seemed like the load returned to me. Hey, said I, I'll know how to get my load lifted. I'll watch the sunset. And so I fled to the same place where last evening I watched the sunset. And I looked at the sunset to get my burden lifted, and the burdens were not gone. I couldn't understand it. Where are my burdens? Why aren't they lifted? They're still here. And I watched the sunset, and I said, it's not the same as yesterday. What's happened? I can't understand it. And then it hit me. Yesterday, the sun was setting in the clouds. And today, there were no clouds. And because there were no clouds, my load was not lifted. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing so overrated as a recession. But you say, well, how? You don't understand. I understand you don't have to look like that. And I understand you don't have to moan. And I understand you don't have to gripe. I mean, listen, you got a Bible here, just as true as it was in prosperity. Every promise of this book is just as real as it always has been. And God is just as much alive. And salvation is just as wonderful. And I want to tell you something. You are passing up the genuine joys of life in an effort to afford the counterfeit joys of life. Friendship that can be bought to the poor is usually too expensive for the wealthy to afford. Happiness is seldom wrapped in velvet, but rather covered with simplicity. You'd be amazed how much fun a mom and a son can have playing an old-fashioned game of checkers. They don't cost much. Mom used to make them. You'd be surprised how much fun you can have without going down to these little wicked places where they have these electronic games. I've forgotten what they are. What do you call them? Arcade, jazz, stay out of them. You haven't got any business in them. Stay out of them. Nothing but modern pool halls, that's all they are. You don't have to have the Batman to be happy. You'd be shocked if you knew how much fun a family could have pulling taffy. You'd be amazed if you knew how much fun you could have making popcorn balls at night. Or playing Monopoly. Or old-fashioned dominoes. I know some people who do right well who never have played Batman, or never have gone to electronic game parlor, or watched a movie on television. And in spite of being denied those privileges and having the poverty of being unable to afford such fun, these people seem to do right well. I know some very happy young ladies at the college who work day and night to pay tuition who are amazingly happy. I'll guarantee you, can tell you that the happiness in this room is greater in the breast of those in the will of God who have less than it is of those in the will of God who have much. I know some very happy ladies who are rearing children by themselves. And I want to say this. I'm not sure, what this is not true. I'm not sure, but what, that the percentage of young people growing up in one-parent homes, I mean being reared by a widow or a lady whose husband jilted her, I'm not sure, but what the percentage of those young people who turn out right is higher than those who have moms and dads living at home. You say, why is it? I'll tell you what it is. P-O-V-E-R-T-Y. I'll tell you what. Won't you try to build a soapbox with your son? Find tricycle. Take the wheels off of it. How many ever built soapboxes growing up? Now, I never have had a Honda, but I'll guarantee you, you never had any more fun with your Honda than I have with my soapbox. I mean, get some lumber somewhere and a crate and get some wheels off a broken tricycle and make an old-fashioned soapbox. Well, then I've even built them with steering wheels, everything. And then I've landed in more ditches going downhill than anybody in America. I know what you do. Build a scooter. Find some old skate somewhere. Take the wheels off the skates. Put them on a 2x4, underside of a 2x4. Whichever is the underside of a 2x4. And put a set of those wheels in the front and a set in the back. And put your 2x4 up here in the front and put a handle on it and scoot down the hill. You'd be amazed how much joy you can have. Ever try making a slingshot? Get you the fork of a limb somewhere. Cut it off here and here and down here. Get you a piece of string and attach it here, a piece of string, attach it here, and a piece of inner tube, attach it to the string on either side, another piece of string at the end of the inner tube rubber, and at the end of that, get you the tongue off a shoe, and attach it to the string, and hold it like this, and get you a stone, and just shoot birds as long as you want to. Man, I've been chee-chee hunting many a time. Chee-chee's a Greek word for sparrow. In Texas, we called them chee-chees. And I've shot many a chee-chee. You say they have a right to live too, but I have a right to have fun too. I'm not talking about the rich folks outside this room. I'm talking about us. We're so spoiled. We don't know how to have fun anymore. Takes a dollar bill, have fun. Takes money, have fun. I serve notice on you that America took less sleeping pills, took less tranquilizers, had less nervous breakdowns, when we were poor, and now that we're rich. Learn to play croquet in the yard. Or build a swing in the yard. I didn't say buy a swing, I said build a swing. Or learn to pitch horseshoes. Or pitch in washers. Or play a game of marbles. Or make some candy. Or tell a bedtime story. Or have a sing-along. Or you'd be shocked how much fun you can have. I was in Jacksonville, Florida, preaching the other day for Dr. Bob Gray. I got a gift. A lady said, I know that there's not much I could give you that you would want. But she said, I heard you preach and I heard you tell about a picture your mama used to have. And she said, I think I have the same picture. I'm not for sure. But she said, I hope it's the same one. She said, I get your tapes every week. And she said, I love you and love your preaching and love what you stand for. And she said, if this is the same picture your mama had, I want you to have it. And she gave me that picture right there. And that brought back some of the sweetest memories I know in the world. My mama, that picture was on the wall where we lived. We didn't have much. But that picture always went everywhere. It was on the little shack on Ann Arbor that had two rooms and an outhouse on the wall in that shack. It was on the little apartment we had on Exeter with two rooms. And the little two-room shack we lived in on Hudspeth, that picture was always on the wall. It was on the wall, that one room we had on the corner of Fernwood and Hudspeth, where Dad and Mom and Earlene and I all lived in one room. We slept there. We ate there. We used the bathroom in that same room. And I won't explain it to you exactly how we did it. None of your business. But some of you folks are old enough and poor enough to know. But, it was always on the wall. Now, you say, what's that got to do with poverty? My mom would take that picture. And she'd say, son, let me tell you this story. And she'd make up a story. She'd say, son, that little bird right there's got a crippled leg. She said, that little bird left its nest in the morning, and somebody shot at it, probably with a slingshot. And she'd say, son, That little girl there, she wants to help the bird. And she's talking to the bird, and she's saying, "Little bird, you're going to get better. I broke my leg one time, and I got better, and now I can run and play. Little bird, you're going to get better." And back home in the nest, there was Mama Bird and Papa Bird. And they said, "Oh, where's my wandering bird tonight?" And my mom would make up stories like that and tell me stories. You know what? That dead sure beats the children's television Saturday morning programs. I mean, there was a day when mamas didn't plop their kids down in front of a box and say, "Box, entertain the kids while I'm taking care of having some fun for myself." I've said this 10,000 times. We got too many adult teenagers today. We got too many adults that are in too many athletic leagues and long too many country clubs. We need some old-fashioned mamas again to stay home and teach their kids the things about God and about life. Now, I'll guarantee you one thing. There's not a young person in this house today. I don't care if you got your own car. I don't care if you got your own motorcycle. I don't care. Not one of you had any more fun than I had when Mama sat down and told me stories like this. Time we learned to be poor. And it's time we quit associating the dollar with happiness. Never has been a house that made anybody happy. Never has been a car that made anybody happy. Never has been furniture that made anybody happy. Never has been a salary made anybody happy. Never has been a wardrobe that made anybody happy. We had no television. Our radio had earphones. Only one of us could listen at one time. When Joe Louis would fight, Dad would always listen to the first round. Earlene, the second round. I hated her. I always got the third round. Mama got it broadcast by the three of us. But my problem is, I never got to listen to Joe Louis fight. They never lasted past two rounds. He always knocked a guy out in Earlene's round. And I wanted to knock her out in the third round. You know, somebody said, "I wish I were a Russell Anderson or a John Byler or a Jack DeCoster and could give millions away to God." I got news for you folks. A poor bus kid doesn't need millions. You've got what he needs. A hungry stomach doesn't need millions. It just needs a little food. A hungry cold feet don't need millions. They just need to be shod with a pair of shoes. The aged person in the rest home doesn't need millions. He just needs somebody to come to see him and shake his hand and smile at him and pat him on the back and tell him God loves him and sing a song to him. You'd be amazed. Happiness is just as close as the nearest rest home. Just as close as the nearest hungry child. Just as close as the nearest cold feet. Just as close as the nearest cold body. It's just as close as the nearest bereaved soul. I'm saying, get out of under your juniper tree and forget your self-pity. By the way, for that matter, forget pitying your kids. More kids will go to the devil because their parents pity them than most anything in the whole world. Poor child. Fooey on that stuff. Your child lives in America, he's fortunate. Well, I wish I could afford to give my child. Everybody else gives theirs. Yeah, and it'll turn out like everybody else's child will, too. Let me say again. Every happy person in this world got happy with things that are available to every human being. I said, every happy person in this world got happy with things that are available to every human being. Hey, a thimble could all hold all the happiness in Hollywood. Let me remind you, it wasn't Lee Robertson committed suicide, Elvis Presley. Wasn't Mrs. Bartels committed suicide? Who was it? Marilyn Monroe. Glad to have some knowledgeable Hollywood people here this morning. So cut your lifestyle down. Alter your appetites according to your haves. You cut your appetite down to fit what you can afford. Get acquainted with the flea market and a Goodwill store. Quit feeling sorry for yourself and for your children. Huddle up in a family circle. Believe in God and believe in heaven. Claim his promises. Get rid of your new car and get an older car. Get a cheaper place to live. Eat less expensive food. Plan family fun. Live in the book. Walk on your knees. Build that Sunday school class. Rejoice always. Help others. Be a friend. And live within your means. I said live within your means. I said live. And don't buy what you can't afford. Get rid of your credit cards. Tear them up. You can't afford a three-room house, then live in a two-room house. If you can't afford a new car, then drive an old car. If you can't afford an old car, get you a bicycle built for two. You can't afford a color television, have black and white. Can't afford black and white, get you a radio. Can't afford a radio, then get you, then have a sing-along. Never has been. There never has been in the history of this nation as many disgruntled, unhappy, griping, complaining teenagers as we have today. And they're all a bunch of teenagers who are spoiled rotten. Senior appointment time. Here comes young people to my office to have their senior appointments. Now listen to me. Here comes young lady in. She's got the prettiest dress that Rosalie's has. She's dressed elegantly. She drove a car of her own, or one that she has access to the appointment. She has her own room. Anything she wants, she gets it. I'm not talking about any one person, I'm talking about a group of people. They come to my office. There's another group. She only has one or two dresses. She wears a simple dress in. She has to have somebody drive her or maybe beg a ride to come to church for the appointment. She shares room with two sisters. She walks in. The first young lady says, yeah. There's nothing any worse than for us. It's this yeah generation. Yeah. So-and-so, yeah, yeah. Try yes, sir, on for size. Or yes, ma'am, for size. If that's old-fashioned, you're an idiot. We need some old-fashioned virtue and dignity and propriety and respect in America. She comes in. Helen Curtis, to her, is a foreigner. Avon never calls at her house. But she has the beauty on her face that a blush can give, and a brightness in her eyes only painted by innocence, and a sweetness about her posture only given by those who've worn skirts all their lives. And I'll guarantee you, that little crowd of young girls who have less rise head and shoulders in senior appointment time above those that have the most. I'm not trying to discourage you that have. I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm simply saying it's available to you too. Happiness is available to you rich folks too. Now, it'll be harder for you to find because you got to wade through so much junk to get to it. The other day, I took Jack DeCosta with me on a trip. This fellow gave us this parking garage down here, built the gymnasium at the college for us. First time I ever took a trip with him, I had a leather suitcase. He had one that was tied up with rope. Multi-millionaire. And I'm a multi-dollar heir. Went together. The other day I was with him sitting in a motel room. And he said, Dr. Howells, explain something to me. I said, what's that? He said, why do people that have a suit want another one? I didn't know the answer. He said, I've got two, but don't know what to do with the other one. Isn't that great? Multi-millionaire. He could buy Hart, Shaft, and Marks and give it, like the wealthy Texan who bought his son a set of golf clubs and apologized because four of them didn't have swimming pools. Come on, folks, get them quickly. We got to get out of here. I mean, he said, he don't understand that. Why? Person has a suit, needs another one. There's a man. They could have anything he wants. He could. He does. He could have anything you want. But his tastes are simple. We used to sing, "You can't buy the love of a mother or noonday when sunshine is gone. You can't buy your youth when you have grown old. The best things in life are free." And so, people of First Baptist Church Hammond, to whom God has given me the responsibility of leading in some way, learn to be poor. It's a rich life. Father, bless.